This is Heart of a Lion, the official podcast of UNA Athletics.
Ivy at the free throw line, out to Emma for the tie. It's up and in, and Emma was fouled. Oh my stars!
Get in the end zone, six. He did. Touchdown, Lions.
He drives this one to left. This is back. Where? Back at the warning track. Ball game!
Play action fake, middle. The field for Bird goes up high, makes the grab.
Welcome into this first ever podcast, an official podcast about the University of North Alabama Athletic Department. I'm Benjamin Ray alongside Brian Neese, a broadcast partner for the last couple of years. And Brian, it's kind of crazy. I'm in Florence, Alabama. You're connecting up with us over there in Fayetteville, Tennessee, where you're from. But it's great technology can get us together.
Yeah, this is pretty cool to be able to do this. We've been apart now since, toward the end of basketball and now that we can do this, it's pretty cool.
But one of the things we'll do in this podcast is just reminisce about UNA as we get closer to having some games. We'll use it for game previews. We'll hear from coaches, players, administrators. It's just going to be your all-around source for some inside talk about UNA athletics. But, Brian, let's just kind of talk about the last handful of years that you and I have been broadcasting. And you started broadcasting football 5 years ago. But before that, I don't know if a lot of UNA fans know about your broadcasting background. I mean, you were the voice of the Huntsville Stars for many years. Take us through some of your broadcast experiences prior to UNA.
Yeah, I've done a lot. I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing, but I did work for the Huntsville Stars for about 6 years. And that was really during the Ryan Braun era. Some of the folks listening will remember that name. With the Brewers and Corey Hart, some of those guys. That was a ton of fun. Enjoyed minor league baseball. The hours are long in minor league baseball. You may have a 6 a.m. tarp pull and then a game go 14 innings on you, and then you've probably got a tarp pull the next morning. So the hours can be long in minor league baseball, but I enjoyed it. It was a ton of fun and moved on from there and called some Tennessee Valley Vipers football games, indoor arena football, ended up calling the season that won the AF2 championship up in Spokane, Washington, and that was a thrill as well. So, yeah, done a lot, been with UNA for the last 5 years, and it's been an absolute blast, that's for sure.
You know, something I was just thinking about, championships seem to follow you wherever you go. You broadcasted the D2 National Championship game with UNA. I love seeing your scorebook. It's got all the big names of guys that you called their games with the Stars, from a Prince Fielder to Brian McCann and Jeff Francoeur. You know, Braves fans, you know, we're in Braves country. That people will be excited to hear that. But I always enjoy when you come over to baseball or softball and I get to poke around and look at that book.
Yeah, it's something that I enjoy going back to look at, too. You mentioned some of the names that are in that book and championships. Actually, my last year with the Stars, we were within one pitch of winning the Southern League and got beat on a walk-off home run. And Montgomery Biscuits beat us that year. And that was just heartbreaking. But, yeah, talking about that scorebook, there's a lot of names in there. And one name that folks around here are going to remember is Acuna, Ronald Acuna. Well, when I was with the Stars, his dad was playing with the Stars. And there was a kid that hung around the locker room, the clubhouse. I don't know if it was junior or not, but I don't remember for sure. But I got to think it probably was. And I wish I'd have known then what I know now about him. But that was pretty cool as well.
That's crazy. And didn't you call one of Brian McCann's final games before he got called up or something like that?
He was in Huntsville when he got called up. And what's funny is, you go back and look at these things now. And when McCann got called up, I said, why in the world are they calling this guy up? He'll never make it. He'll be back down in the minor leagues, you know, probably in a couple weeks. And, well, we know how that story turned out. He had a remarkable big league career. So I was wrong about that one, and I was happy that I was wrong because I've been a Braves fan forever. So it was good to see him get called up.
That's always – I always enjoy hearing that. I love BMAC. All right, 5 seasons at UNA. This first episode, we're going to kind of dive into some of our favorite moments over the last couple of years that we've been broadcasting together. We've been in the football booth the last 3 years. We've done basketball, baseball during that stretch as well. But your 5 years collectively calling UNA football, just what are some of your favorite games that you can remember?
Well, you know, obviously the D2 National Championship didn't turn out the way that we wanted it to, but that game obviously stands out. The game before that, to the semifinal game to get to Kansas City, when we played, I think it was Shepherd in that semifinal game, that was just an amazing feeling watching that team, because you never really had the thought of, although it was a close game, you never really had the thought that UNA was in trouble. For me anyway, it just felt like, you know, we're getting there. I mean, there's no question about it. And they did. And we know what happened in the D2 National Championship game didn't go our way. But that game, you know, the semifinal game is one that really stands out. And then the first Division I game for North Alabama on the road at Southern Utah, what a game that was. What a feeling it was. I think the emotions in that game, you know, like a roller coaster, up and down. And, oh, man, we're going to win. Nope, we're beat. Nope, we're going to win. You know, just all over the place. And you look at those games, and they were just a blast to call in there in the booth with you.
Man, going back to the D2 National Championship game, I was there as a spectator. It was freezing cold. But just that whole season, I remember going into it and thinking, like, I don't know how good this team will be. What are they going to look like? It felt like we'd lost a lot from the year prior. But do you just remember how great Jacob Tucker was? Where does he rank amongst players of any sport that you've been fortunate enough to call?
Oh, he's up there. He's top two or three. I mean, he's just a competitor with such a fireball energy that, you know, when the game was on the line and the ball was in his hands, you really didn't have a concern. I mean, we saw him do it so many times, you know, bring a team down the field when they had to have a score. He did it time and time again. And just an unreal competitor. And I think, you know, I wasn't in the locker room a lot with those guys, but I know that he was a leader on the field, so I've got to think that he was in the locker room as well. And they believed in him. When they saw him go out and put a drive together like that, it was something that they could see in his eyes. Hey, you know, let's get the ball in our quarterback's hands. We're going to go win this game.
I never will forget one particular play he had against West Alabama, kind of towards the beginning of the season, I think. He was rolling all around, people chasing him, and he threw back across his body or something. He hit Jacob Thomas wide open. I think he got tackled down at the one. But I would just, when I think of Jacob Tucker, that's the play that always comes to mind, just him making something happen.
Yeah, I know the exact play you're talking about. I remember it and remember it well. He could create just off of his legs alone. He could keep a play alive. If there's nobody open, then he had the ability to scramble around all over the place and try to find somebody open. And if there wasn't, he would just take what he could get. He had that kind of ability. When you've got a guy, a quarterback, that can play like that and has the ability to keep something alive when there's nothing there, that's a special guy, and that's what Jacob Tucker was.
You know, our 3 years in the broadcast booth together, I kind of went back and I looked at our season openers. And our first ever game together was an 8-7 loss at home to Texas A&M Commerce. Commerce went on to win the national championship game that year. Second year together was the Southern Utah game that you just referenced, the first ever Division I game. UNA won it 34-30. The third game, the Western Illinois game, it's special in a lot of reasons. It was the first home Division I game since like the 90s, but the first ever with UNA being a Division I team. We beat Western Illinois. But for you and I, it was our first game getting to broadcast on ESPN. So you just look at the last 3 years, and our season openers, rather, I mean, they've been all over the place just in terms of excitement.
Yeah, this season opener's got a lot to live up to, that's for sure. And yeah, you look back at just those three games alone, you know, don't even take into account into the rest of the seasons, those three games alone. And this year, the Western Illinois game was not settled until late in the game. So it was nip and tuck back and forth the entire way. And then you mentioned Commerce game, a one-point game. And then we all know what happened at Southern Utah. We just talked about that. But, yeah, we've had some great season openers and looking forward to a few more.
Southern Utah, sometimes I think a lot of things get neglected in that game, just looking back at it, like so much unknown going into it from just about everything. Hey, it's our first ever Division I game, Southern Utah. They've been really good the last couple of years. They've got a lot of experience back. But that final touchdown catch with Dexter Boykin jumping up, the guy that he jumped over, I'll never forget, he was a sophomore. Jalen Russell might have been his name, I think. But he was a freshman All-American the season before. I mean, that was a Power 5 kid from Arizona, I think, that had transferred in. And there's Dexter Boykin in his first ever college football game winning the jump ball in the corner to give UNA the win. And somebody has a great sideline shot, sideline video. I don't remember who it is, just of the overall catch, but – to me, and I don't know how other UNA fans feel about this, but I put it up there with the category of the blocked punt in the national championship game in 93 that Israel Rabin had, the Cody Gross touchdown plunge, McKinnon's interception. I mean, to me, that play, the magnitude of that play, the first ever Division I win, a freshman, redshirt freshman in his first game going up like that, I just think that touchdown's up there is – one of the greatest plays of all time in UNA football history, and there's been a lot of them.
I think you're right, and it's, there's no way to know the answer to this, but if he doesn't make that catch, if something crazy happens, you know, how does that change the trajectory of UNA football? Does it change it at all? I don't know, but I think, you know, him making that catch and going on and winning that game really propelled the way maybe fans looked at it, and even more so, maybe recruits. You know, that North Alabama can go into a place like Southern Utah, who's been pretty good in the last couple of years, been down here in the last year or so. But before that, Southern Utah had been really, really good. And for North Alabama to go in there on game one and win that football game, I think that raised a lot of eyebrows, not only here locally in Florence, but, you know, guys that North Alabama is recruiting. And so they're saying, hey, all right, this team knows what they're doing. I mean, they're going in game one and winning a Division I game on the road. That's impressive, I think, and I think it raised a lot of eyebrows.
Well, let's jump into this. And okay, we're the broadcast crew for UNA. Our homerism really gets to come out on radio, ESPN. We've got to be a little neutral, but you know, we're always gonna be biased towards UNA because I mean, for what UNA is to us, but you know. One of my favorite things since this Division I move has started, and we heard it out in Southern Utah. I remember talking to the replay official. Their conference is slipping my name. They're out there with Eastern Washington. I can't think of it off the top of my head. But, you know, their replay official was like, look, y'all are going to be good fast. Like, y'all just beat a really good team. It's not going to take long. I remember we go up to North Dakota State. All the North Dakota State people are like, hey, we don't want to play on 5 years. I mean, in 5 years, y'all are going to be – playoff caliber team. We go to Kennesaw, Georgia this year, the Kennesaw State people. Hey, 3-4 years, we don't want nothing to do with you guys. Montana was the same way. All the Montana people were just so, hey, we beat you guys pretty good in the second half, but oh my goodness, this is just year two. I think UNA's made a lot of big statements, and I don't think people realize how tough it is to go from Division II to Division I. It's a big jump. It's going to take time to build program depth, still getting some resources to have a full coaching staff. But I just think the first 2 years, Chris Willis and this staff have made a big impression across the nation.
Yeah, I can't imagine what it has to be like as a coaching staff going from Division II to Division I, and the hurdles that you have to clear and, you know, the hoops that you have to jump through. It's tough, and the job that they have done is just remarkable. I mean, yes, they've lost some games where, yeah, they probably should have won those games, and I think they would be the first ones to tell you that. But I don't think that puts a shadow on anything that North Alabama has done, and you're exactly right. People came up to us in North Dakota and in Montana and said those exact same things, and I think they're right. I think North Alabama has the chance to be really, really good in the next 2 or 3 years. You know, they've got a good group coming in, got a group already there. That receiving crew is just, they are so talented. They're going to be, you know, you look back on that crew in the last 4 or 5 years and you're going to smile that you got to watch those guys play. So yeah, I think, you know, the team that North Alabama will have the next 3-4 years, and they're going to be good. And they're going to be a team that a lot of teams will have to contend with.
And I know some of the results are disappointing, but I also think it's just crazy that our first year in the Big South, off the top of my head, I can't remember the exact number of games that we won, but the number of games that we were competitive in Big South Conference play, the number of games we were positioned to win in the fourth quarter, and this is just year two. You know, these other programs have been playing at this level for much longer than that. And I don't know. I know the wins and losses to me can be very deceiving. 4-7 last year, the Big South wins, Presbyterian, lost to Hampton, lost to Charleston Southern, but still you felt like you could win both of those looking back. Yeah. Kennesaw's a national power. That's who we're chasing. Campbell was a great game 2 years in a row. Monmouth, we lost, but I thought we played a good ball game. I didn't get to go to that one, but you were out there calling it. Gardner-Webb, so 7 Big South games, we go 3-4, and you look, we very easily could have flipped that and gone 5-2 just about, just one possession losses like that. And I think the expectation every year is, hey, we're going to win the conference, which I think is great that that's the expectation, but I think when you really get into the weeds of it, what this coaching staff has done through 2 seasons, I mean, we really shouldn't be moving that fast through this. It gets me excited.
You know, when you mentioned the Campbell game, that's one game that really, I guess, kind of opened my eyes this year as to what the possibilities are. We went to Campbell a couple of years ago, and they got us pretty good. I mean, they got after us over there. And then basically they bring the same team back here this past year, and we beat them at our place. And that kind of told me that, you know what, yeah, we went over there and they got after us pretty good. Really, we didn't know what it was about traveling as a Division I team. You know, we were still a Division II team playing a Division I team, basically. And then Campbell comes here this past year, and we beat them. And that kind of opened my eyes a little bit. And you mentioned the Monmouth game. In the first half, we were right there with them. I don't remember what the score was at halftime, but we were right there with them. And, you know, we scored, I think I'm right in saying this, the most points any conference team scored against Monmouth. I think that's right. So, you know, Monmouth had a really good team, and we were able to go to their place. It was freezing cold up there and put some points on the board. There was a miraculous play. I think happened toward late in the game, maybe the last play of the game, where a pass was thrown in the end zone to Christian Lopez. That was a fun play to call, thinking back on some things up there. But, yeah, I think you're talking about the speed that UNA is moving. I think things are going to change record-wise here sooner rather than later, the way they're putting together a team so fast.
I can't wait for football season, man. Let's get there to it. Hey, let's shift gears. Let's shift over to basketball. And let's start with the women. I mean, how many years did you get to call them? 2-3 years of calling their games?
Yeah.
I called them 4 years. I mean, this group of seniors for me is going to rank up there for one of my most memorable groups I've ever covered.
They'll by far, this year's team and last year's team, they'll – by far be the most memorable teams that I've ever watched play. And I don't say that as teams that I broadcasted. I mean that as teams that I've watched play, period. They are so good together and play so well together. I hate the way that their season had to end the way it did. I think they had a chance to play some more basketball before it was all said and done, but they were just so much fun to watch. And, you know, you look back at the Wallen sisters playing, and they were just miraculous. And then Brittany Panetti down low being a force in the middle. The player that really stood out to me, besides the obvious, is Ansley Eubank. I know Ansley didn't score a lot. She wasn't a big contributor as far as points go. But Ansley usually guarded the best player on the other team, and she did a great job. She was a phenomenal defensive player, was all over the place defensively, was not afraid to get in there and grab a big rebound when needed. She was physical. She was tough. And she'll be the one of the ones that I remember for a long time, the way she played.
Kenesha Colson, the fifth senior. I had a good interview with them the other day. Depending on when this podcast is posted, I don't know when that's going to air. But hearing the five of them wrap up their careers, it really was something special. And, you know, one of my favorite things about what we get to do is – We travel with the teams. We go to shoot-arounds. We talk to the coaches. And you build those relationships with the coaches and with the players. And you could just see from all of them just what it all meant to them. And knowing how hard they worked, seeing the success that they had. I mean, some of my favorite memories with them are games on the road that they lost to Xavier, where they should have won that game. Going out to Iowa State last year. I didn't get to go to the Iowa game, but, you know, crap. Those are power fives. You know, we should have beaten them. And I never will forget their first win over Vandy, just another year one national statement. You know, ESPNW, ESPN running with the story, and all five of them were just juniors at that point. I mean, you know, Ivy Wallen, you know, the team goes down as one of my favorite teams, and Ivy goes down as just one of the most unbelievable players that I've ever covered. Emma, just so competitive. I loved her fierceness out there on the court, never shy down. You mentioned Ansley, the do-it-all player. Brittany, I mean, I didn't know what to expect from Brittany coming from New Mexico. Her stats as a freshman in New Mexico weren't that impressive. But then to be a 1,000-point scorer at UNA in 3 years, the school's all-time block leader in just 3 years, think about what she could have done in 4 years. It's very remarkable. And Kenesha Colson just always felt like the glue that held it all together on both ends of the floor. I mean, just Coach Tiber just did an unbelievable job with this bunch.
You know, you're talking about Kenesha, and Coach Tiber may have this, and I would love to know this stat. How many charges taken that Kenesha Colson had? I mean, it's a ton, and that hurts. I mean, you know, consistently taking a charge like that is no fun. Kenesha may think it's fun. I don't know. She took a million of them, but that's got to hurt, and her body took a beating, but she always jumped right back up. I don't ever remember a time where she took a charge and stayed down for 2 or 3 seconds. It seemed like every time she would just stand there, take the charge, and boom, she's right back up, and that's just pure toughness.
You know, Coach Tiber told me one time that the amount of pain that Kenesha Colson could play through. If I'm not mistaken, I think she like dislocated a shoulder one time, popped it back in, went back in the game or something like that. She just said that, you know, she's one of the toughest players she has ever coached. And that kind of goes to what you're saying with the charges.
Yeah, she's definitely tough. And one more thing that I was thinking about while you're sitting there talking was the look that Ivy and Emma would give on the floor. It's scary. I mean, to look out there and see the look on their face. And I've talked to them both about it, but it's determination. That's a look of determination of whatever just happened bad is not going to happen again. You may have scored on me, or you may have, you know, fouled me hard, or whatever the situation, it was not going to happen again. And I love that look. And when you saw that look, watch out, because something's coming. It was just fun to watch.
I always felt bad for the officials, too, because they could all give officials an earful. And I just always felt so bad for those officials. You know, we never really got a chance to, you know, a lot of times after games, you know, I'd be at home games, I'd be on ESPN, you'd be on radio, sometimes you'd be with me. But after this last game against Liberty, you know, we never really got a chance to sit down and talk just because that's when everything happened. You know, that's when all the craziness started in the world. But Jada Bond against Liberty, 19 points. She had a big three. She had the layup to tie the game to send it to regulation. I watched the highlights the other day, and I got chills watching Jada Bond. I mean, how spectacular was she in that game?
She was lights out, and she is going to be, when her career is over at North Alabama, she's going to be one of those players that you look back again. We've said this with Emma and Ivy, and Jada's going to be in that category, I think. As well as she plays and as good as she is, she's going to be a special player as well. And when all her career is said and done, she's going to be one of those players that you're saying to yourself, wow, I wish I'd had a chance to watch her play more. And I was thinking that. You know, after the Liberty game, I thought that, and I told that to Austin Coletti, who was on the radio with me. I said, I wish we could watch her play more this year, and talking about this past season. And as things turned out, it didn't work out that way. But she's special, and I'm excited to watch her this year.
Let's shift over to the men. Team 2, as they kind of called themselves. I had a lot of fun watching this group. I think Tony Pujols is doing a great job, and 13-17 overall, 8-8 in conference play. And you look, and again, you got to look deeper than the records. 9-4 at home in Flowers Hall. They were just a few games away from finishing third or fourth in the conference standings for the second year in a row. And this is a team led by underclassmen, Jamari Blackman. You know, he'll be the guy coming in next year. I've really enjoyed watching this men's team this season.
It's a team where that I felt you're watching them and you think, wow, they're right there. They're right on the cusp of grasping it and putting it all together and being a team that contends for a conference championship. And I think that's where they're at. Coach Pujols, you mentioned him and the staff. They do a fantastic job with that program. And he gets so much out of his players. I'm not sure that any other coach would get as much as he does out of those guys. I know he challenges them in practice, but you can also see in the game where he's over there on the sideline, and he's getting every bit he can out of those players on that floor. And that's what you want in a coach, and that's what he does, and he does a fantastic job of getting everything out of those guys.
You know, a little broadcast talk here. Where we are at inside of Flowers Hall, we're opposite the benches. So our broadcast tables look at the benches. I hate when I go on the road and I'm next to the benches. And it happens from time to time. Most people put all their broadcasters opposite the tables.
Yeah.
But it's so funny. I hate sitting next to the men, both the men and women, because one, both coaches just have this knack about, I'm going to stand directly in front of Ben. But then the other thing is the assistants for both teams are so loud. They're so vocal. And a lot of times I find myself, hey, I'm inching the crowd mic away. Oh, let me turn it down.
Yeah.
Not because they're saying
anything
bad, but just because of how active they all are. You're talking about how good they do coaching and how fierce they are. That just kind of got me thinking. I hate when I'm next to them. I always get to an arena, look for them at where I'm at, and I'm like, oh, man, I'm right next to the bench. My other fear, I don't know if you've ever had this, I'm always worried I'm going to say something like, and I'd kid with Emma Wallen, or Emma Wallen kids me about this. She says, oh, another missed three from Emma Wallen. Or Ainsley Eubank used to say, oh, another turnover from Ainsley. I always get nervous that I'm going to say something, they're going to hear it. Because there was a game, two games this year at Kennesaw this year, one of their players was shooting free throws trying to ice the game. And it's nobody's in the gym. So everybody can hear every word that I'm saying because it's a big gym.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody's in it. My voice is just radiating through. And if she's shooting a free throw, I go, Alexis Poole comes set. Free throw on the way. She fires it. She misses it. And she turned around and she glared at me as if to blame me that I was the reason she missed that.
That was
shot.
Your fault.
I don't know if you've ever had experiences like that calling games.
Yeah, I've had a few of those, and it's awkward, you know, when you get that moment where something like that, with a free throw where the game is on the line, and if it's the home team shooting the free throw, it's going to be quiet in the gym.
Yep.
I mean, we saw that at UNA in that Liberty game. The crowd was just bonkers, losing their mind, but when UNA would go to the free throw line, you could hear a pin drop. And that's when, you know, you're trying to talk over the crowd, and then in that moment when it's quiet, you're looking around, you're thinking, all right, can everybody in this gym hear every word I'm saying? Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about, and that's a little awkward situation for sure.
Yeah, it's one of those things, you think about it for a split second, and then you forget about it, and then big moments, we're getting off topic here, big moments when they happen. You know, Dexter Boykin's touchdown catch, a game winner. I always think, oh, my God, I don't remember what I said. I hope I didn't blow that.
Oh, absolutely. And kind of along that same topic here, and I guess we're kind of pulling the curtain back a little bit on broadcasting. And I think you've said this before, too. After a game, don't ask me what the score was. I have a clue. If I know the score – something's wrong because I really, somebody else said, well, what was the score? No clue. Couldn't tell you. And I don't know why that is. Maybe it's just I'm so caught up in the game itself and not worried about what, you know, I know in the back of my mind what the score is, obviously, but when the game's over in basketball, more so than football, I couldn't tell you. Don't ask me what the score was.
No, I'm right there with you. I can remember games where we're waiting in line to get on the plane with football, and everybody, it's late, it's midnight, everybody's just ready to get on the plane. And I'll just kind of be rewinding back through the day, like, oh, we had this for pregame meal. We got to the stadium. And then I'm thinking, I don't remember anything about the game. I don't remember the score. I don't remember anything. Yeah. And then a couple of days later, it'll start coming back. But it's just one of those things. A lot of times when we finish a game, say it's a home game, like, I'll ride home. You've got a longer drive than me, but it's like I'll ride home in just complete silence because it's almost like I can't process things. And a lot of times, I don't want to sound like, hey, don't come talk to me after games. People come talk to me after games, and I feel like I'm oblivious to what's going on around me. Like,
sure,
all right, what just happened? The game's over. I don't remember anything. It's kind of along the lines of what you're saying. And I think back to Southern Utah in the booth when Dexter Boykin caught that touchdown pass. I remember you and I, we were doing the broadcast celebration where we're not screaming, we're not hooping and hollering, but, you know, we're kind of shoving each other, throwing our arms around. But we were right next to the coaching staff, and they were going crazy. I will never forget that.
Yes, they were. And you know what else I remember from that game is, and you I know you remembered as well, Mark Linder was in our booth for a good part of that game and mostly in the second half. And I just remember the look on his face was just, I mean, his smile couldn't get any bigger. He knew what was happening and he could kind of feel the moment. I'd love to ask him that. And I don't know if he'd remember it or not, but I remember the smile on his face. Like you remember those coaches and you know, that had to be a moment that he'll never forget as a person or as an athletic director. Remembering what was going on in that game. That was just remarkable.
Yeah, that, it was just special, man. We just took a deep detour from talking basketball.
I know.
Yeah, but going back to basketball, I mean, Jamari Blackman, Murph James, Manny Littles, they'll be the core group coming back and talking with the coaches. I know they've got a lot in store, but I don't know. I think the world of what this coaching staff is doing.
Oh, they're remarkable. And Merv James is just going to be a monster to deal with in the A-Sun next year. The teams are going to have problems trying to defend Merv James. And yeah, those other guys you mentioned as well, it's going to be a good team. It's going to be a team that people are going to want to come out and watch next year. They're going to be a lot of fun. They're a year older. They're a year better. It's going to be a fun group to watch. And like I said earlier with Coach Pujol, the way he gets – every drop out of his players, you know, they'll have a lot to give him, that's for sure.
All right, let's slide over to softball. And, all right, you're minor league baseball. I say you got a baseball background. You've done it all. But, I mean, you were a professional baseball broadcaster for a while. Have you ever called a no-hitter?
I called the only no-hitter I called before a UNA game in a game, if you can believe that. And that was wild. So, yes, I have called a no-hitter before, but I've also called another one, and I think that's what you might be headed toward.
Well, I was going to bring up the Megan Garsh no-hitter.
Yeah.
You and I were on the call on ESPN Plus, and I don't – you know, I want to say it doesn't jump out to memory. I mean, I've called a lot of UNA softball. I don't remember – if Hillary Carpenter ever had a no-hitter or if I called one during those years. But I will never forget this no-hitter regardless, just given who it was. Liberty softball was so good, one of the top teams in the conference. But calling that no-hitter has to rank up there for me in just one of the most thrilling broadcasting experiences I've had.
Oh, absolutely. And the one thing that I can go back and remember in my mind was just how in command she was. It just seemed like every pitch, if it had to be on the black, on the outside corner of the plate, that's exactly where it was. I mean, she was lights out that game as she is most games. But that game in particular, she had it going and so much fun. And I know I've got a question for you as far as that goes. We can save that. I think you might know where I'm headed with that one as far as being in the booth on a no-hitter.
Well, okay. That's where I was going next. Let's peel the curtain back. Let's take you
let's
back inside
this.
The broadcast.
Let's do this. Right.
So, backstory. Megan Garsh threw a one-hitter earlier that year against Alabama State. And I was broadcasting it. And I don't know if Andy Jones was with me or if I was alone. This game wasn't on ESPN. We were just doing it on Lion Vision. So I'm broadcasting it, and Madison Parham, our graduate assistant, sit next to me. And the first time through, Megan Garst did not give up a hit. So, you know, three up, three down, three innings. And I looked at Madison, and I said, I'm going to talk about it. Broadcaster rule, you don't talk about the no-hitter. Every broadcaster says, oh, I don't care about that. But every broadcaster knows about the broadcaster jinx. Yeah. So for they play seven innings in softball. So for the next three and a half, 4 innings, I talked about the no-hitter just like it was nothing. Yeah, Megan Garst hadn't given up a hit. Another three strikeouts in an inning. Bottom of the seventh or top of the seventh inning rolls around. I think it was the leadoff batter that inning hit a double to the wall and broke up the no-hitter in the seventh. It was either to lead off the inning or with two outs. I can't remember. I've never left a press box faster because they were ready to kill me.
That's on you, Ray. That is on you.
It's on me. The no-hitter, there's two things you don't do in a baseball, softball press box. You don't walk in and say, man, this game's really moving fast.
You hear that, Austin Colletti?
5 hours later, you're walking out. 18 innings later, you're walking out.
That's right.
The second thing you don't ever say is, hey, they've got a no-hitter working.
That's right. Yeah. If I'm ever on another call with North Alabama, for any other team for that matter, if there's a no-hitter, you'll never know it with me calling it. Now, I may say something like it's all zeros across the board, but I'll never use the word ever, never, ever, ever, ever will I ever say she has a no-hitter unless it's the other team throwing a no-hitter against us. Then I'm going to say it every other pitch, you know, if I can. But if it's North Alabama, I'll never say it. I feel that way, and I'm like you as well. Man, if it's in the sixth inning and we're an hour in, I'll never say that this game is moving along. I've done it, and I'll never do it again, that's for sure.
Hey, side point, detour again. There was a no-hitter last year in a SEC softball game or something, and the team that was getting no-hit, one of the players went and sat next to the camera and the crowd mic, and she just kept saying into the crowd mic, hey, she's got a no-hitter going. How about that? She was trying to get the reverse jinx working.
And, you know, but baseball and softball people are so – I don't know what the word for it is, but they believe in that stuff, and I'm a baseball guy. Superstitious. I love baseball. I'm a baseball guy. If the Braves were on right now, I'd be watching them. I guarantee it. So I'm of that mindset. If my team has a no-hitter going, I'm never saying a word. There was a game last year, a Braves game, and I don't remember who they were playing or anything like that. But, you know, we're late in the game. It's sixth, seventh inning, and I texted somebody. It may have been you. I don't know who it was. I don't remember. But I texted him and said, hey, you may want to turn that Braves game on. And it took me 5 minutes to send that text because I was afraid that I was going to blow the no-hitter. That's how superstitious I am about that.
And the rule on that, if listeners aren't aware, if you send the text to me, I'm not turning that game on.
That's right. That's
you know,
you can't.
It's like,
you can't.
It's like, don't leave the seat you're in. Don't change anything.
Right, right. Exactly right. that's baseball people for you.
So to take you inside the broadcast booth, everybody's been wearing me out about the Alabama State game, even the Coach Thompson, the pitching coach. Liberty rolls around, and people come to events. You probably see the big trailer outside that we bring around. Well, inside that trailer, you got Eddie Forsythe, Will Corey, Madison, maybe – one more, maybe two more people, depending on how many bodies we get. But there's 3 to 5 people in that trailer, and they're doing everything from producing the game, directing the game, telling camera people what to do, telling you and I when it's a commercial break. Sometimes they tell us when we say something dumb. You got an audio person in there. I mean, there's a lot of
pieces
to this broadcast. And the other thing is we can all talk to each other. During the play, we have a button that we can press – to where we can talk to the trailer, but the listener can't hear it. There's all sorts of cool things.
Right.
We got a cough button, too, which is my favorite button. I hit that cough button.
Yes, it is. I love it.
So, again, third, fourth inning rolls around. We're in a commercial break, and I just make the announcement, all right, guys, no hitter. I'm going to talk about it on the broadcast. And I'll let you tell everybody the reactions.
Oh, no, don't do that. Don't do that. Are you crazy? No.
I got worn out once again. Needless to say, I didn't talk about it. But that's, we would drop every cue in the world, you know. Zeros up on the board for Liberty. Megan Garsh giving up absolutely nothing today. She walked one batter. One walk for Liberty, that's the only base runner. You know, those are all the cues you can kind of look up.
As long as you don't say the words, all that's fine. And if it's ESPN Plus, they're watching. They can see the screen. They can see how many hits they've got. I'm afraid to say it right now. They can see how many hits they've got. Now, if radio, it's a little different. You got to give a few more hints and cues. But yeah, kind of. I'm not comfortable talking about it right now. Even I'm going to mess up somebody's no hitter somewhere.
So baseball threw a no hitter this season. And I was on the call with Austin Coletti. And I don't know if we mentioned it or not. I think I made an effort not to. I need to go back and watch it. UNA, it was four or five pitchers that threw the combined no-hitter. But back-to-back years, I've gotten to call a no-hitter. And I need to go back and see what my approach was for that game. I had a chance to go back and watch it because it was right in the middle of a basketball season. But a no-hitter, man, like, yeah. It puts you on the edge of your seat.
Oh, it does. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's where, you know, you're consciously thinking about what you're saying. And that may sound weird to some people, but during a lot of broadcasts, and I guess you're probably the same way, you're not really consciously thinking about every word that you're saying, except when it's in a no-hitter situation, something like that. And then you're thinking about, oh, my goodness, I've really got to – or I am at least. I'm saying I got to watch what I say here.
Again, broadcast shop talk, something I've been thinking about during this time of quarantine, self-isolation, if you will. You know, with all these old games airing, you see highlights popping up. And this is something I've started thinking about a lot. Like, you know, what we say during a player's moment, that's going to last – forever now. You know, if there's a game-winning shot, like, I want to be careful about what I say because I don't want to ruin that moment for that person, because the highlight's not about what we're saying, but it's about saying the right thing for that person. And that's something I've started thinking about, like, hey, man, don't mess this call up.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I go back to the Christian Agnew's half-court shot and what we said during that. I mean, that was played all over the country on every network, and you know, that was heard everywhere. And oh my goodness, kind of gives you a gasp of, did I say the right thing there? And you know, I think whatever we said, and I don't remember what we said, but I think we did okay with that one. I think.
Okay, and all right, the Southern Utah, we've used that as an example. Then the Christian Agnew buzzer beater. In the moment, I have no clue what we said. It's almost like you black out.
No, yeah.
And then the wonderful Will Corey, you know, he edits it super quick in big moments. He tries to get it uploaded to social media. And I feel like the last thing I always say to him is like, hey, if the call sucks, don't post it.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I know exactly what you mean.
And it'll happen at some point. But, again, it's so much fun what we get to do. The student athletes give us great moments, and I just always hope we can put the right narration to it.
Yeah, you're right. And, you know, it's not about what we say or what we don't say. It's about the athletes. And, you know, they're remarkable to work with. And there's times when – and I've said this to the coaching staff as well there for every sport that I've been able to broadcast. You know, there's times after a loss when coaches, the last thing they want to do is come put a headset on and just talk about what just happened. You know, they want to get in there with their team. They want to get away. They don't want to see anybody. They don't want to talk to anybody. And I've been that way in sports, and you have too. But they still take the time to come over there and talk with us. And you know, we get to chew on their ear a little bit. And so I'm appreciative of that. And, that, you know, I haven't had a coach ever, I don't think, that would not come over and talk after a game. And that's huge for us and for the people who are listening and watching. For coaches to do that, that's huge.
Hey, let's wrap up the conversation with this. We don't get to talk to Chris Willis post-game. Austin Coletti handles that for us. But do you have any favorite post-game interviews that stand out? I've got two if you need a second to think.
I think after Gardner Webb last year is really one that stood out. Number one, because Coach Willis was just – it was a game where it was, you know, nip and tuck to the very end, and it was the last game of the year. And he wanted to end that game on a good note and a high note, and he did. That's one that stands out to me. Not a big game as far as a championship-type game, but that one really stands out to me.
Two of my favorite post-game interviews that I've been able to do, starting with men's basketball, the win over Lipscomb this year at Allen Arena on the road. You know, first off, you know, men's basketball, you know, they play a tough road schedule. I go on the road and do radio, so I don't always get to do a lot of wins because, hey, you know, South Carolina, Indiana, you know, those are going to be losses. You seem to get all the wins at home.
I'll take it.
But you know, that Lipscomb win, the way that they won it, they were kind of struggling there for a little bit versus the way that they closed the game out. It was one of those moments where you really saw the team come together. You could feel the emotion from Coach Poolhole and how proud he was of the team. And getting that road win in that arena against that program, you know, they've been the cream of the crop in the ASUN the last couple of years. That's something that I'll never forget. The other one, and it's really twofold, it's when the UNA women beat Florida Gulf Coast. Mm-hmm. And I got to interview Missy Tiber and Emma Wallen after the game. And I just never will forget how emotional they both were. I remember, you know, we grabbed players after games, and the players ran over to the bench to celebrate. They're celebrating with UNA fans back behind us. And as Emma walked by, I said, "Hey, Emma, will you do radio for me?" And just the look of disappointment on her face, because she was like, "I want to go celebrate." And I was like, "Oh, no, you got time. Go celebrate." And then she kind of perked back up and went and celebrated. But, you know, sometimes that's the mindset. But, you know, I love just after the games getting to talk to coaches and hear, you know, you win with them, you lose with them, because you know how hard they work. You know what it means to them. And seeing the celebration after both of those wins for both of those coaches. I mean, Coach Tiber and the women beating Florida Gulf Coast, that snapped that – I don't remember what the number was off the top of my head, just that outrageous home win streak or whatever. It had been 2.5, 3 years since they'd lost a conference home game. So that's one of my favorite things about post-game interviews is just getting to almost be a part of the celebration with them and hearing what they have to say.
Yeah, I agree with you. That's a great point. And those interviews that are right after the game, that's pure raw emotion right there. They haven't had time to think about it. They haven't had time to develop an answer. And so, I think that's a good thing for us anyway. I don't know what the coaches and players feel about it, but I think that's perfect that, you know, as soon as it's over, we're getting what they really feel. That's that raw emotion that's coming out, and it's a good thing to hear.
I agree. Brian, this has been fun, man. We talked about a lot of the high moments, some of our big memories. I don't know if we intended it or not, but we talked a lot of broadcast shop. But, you know,
well, that's what we do. So
I guess when you don't get to broadcast, you need somebody to talk with. But, you know, this is kind of the direction we'll move with this podcast. You know, we talked about a lot of our favorite memories. We'll have coaches on. We're going to talk about games more specifically down the road and things we remember. And, you know, if there's certain games listeners want to hear, you know, hit us with a comment, let us know, or coaches, players you want us to have on. And, you know, this is about UNA Athletics, so we'll have fun with it.
I'm looking forward to it. This, I don't know how long we've been doing this tonight, 45 minutes. I have no idea. I've lost track of time, but this has been fun. And I think it'll be fun to listen to down the road.
So that'll do it for episode one. We'll keep this train moving. I'm Benjamin Ray for Brian Neese. We'll see you next time, Lion fans.